Welcome to Firstline. My name is Aubrey Ann Jackson, and I am a PGY1 psychiatry resident physician. In this podcast, we discuss whole person health and wellness through an osteopathic lens, holistically addressing the body, mind, and spirit. We also discuss topics important to medical trainees, including pre-med students, medical students, and residents. Thanks for joining me. Hi, everyone. This episode is mostly for osteopathic medical students as well as osteopathic medical graduates that are in residency, anyone that's studying for any of the COMLEX exams or COMATs. The point of this episode is mostly for educational purposes to help those individuals score better on exams with knowing the Chapman's points as well as some test-taking strategies for them. So, my motivation for making this episode is because I'm currently studying for COMLEX Level 3. I'm studying and preparing for that, and I'm reflecting on how Chapman's points are taught in medical school, as well as how my peers study Chapman's points, and I think that there's a lot wrong with it. So, this episode, I'm going to share how I remember the Chapman's points. And throughout my medical school exams, COMATs, as well as COMLEX 1 through 3, I've never missed a Chapman's point question. And that's really how it should be. You should be able to know these pretty well. And they should be easy questions on test day. Unfortunately, that's not the case for a lot of people, so I'm hoping that this episode helps with that. A lot of my peers watch some sort of video, which I have seen this video. There might be multiple videos out there that show you a way to like write down the Chapman's points, so it's made for you on test day to draw a diagram and label the Chapman's points, and then when you're going through your test, you're supposed to refer to this diagram, and it's supposed to help you answer the question. But this is really the wrong way of understanding Chapman's points and answering questions, because it's gonna take up so much time on test day to write out this diagram when you can just know Chapman's points, and when the questions come up pertaining to Chapman's points, they should be easy points on test day, and you should just be able to know from memory which Chapman's point is referring to what organ, and also knowing when you're given some kind of pathology, you should know where that Chapman's point is. And it helps to actually understand where that Chapman's point is instead of just memorizing where it is on your diagram, because I did day one of COMLEX Level 3, and I definitely got a question that was in a location that was not the location that I even memorized, and it required you to understand anatomy. So that if I did understand Chapman's points just from the diagram that a lot of students and residents write out, then I probably would not have gotten that question correct. So you have to realize Chapman's points are so important to osteopathic medicine, and they're going to show up on every COMLEX exam and every COMAT exam. And you'll see that even if a question is not purely testing your understanding of Chapman's points, a lot of times you'll get question stems that just include the osteopathic structural exam, and like it could be a question about pancreatitis, and then it will say that there's a Chapman point in the seventh intercostal space on the right, and you should be able to, it saves a lot of time on test day because you can glance at the question stem and you can see where the Chapman's point is, and you know immediately that it has to do with the pancreas. So you don't have to waste time looking at answer choices that have to do with other organs and other pathology, because you know that that Chapman's point corresponds to the pancreas. So even if you don't understand the other clues in the question stem, when you're given the Chapman's point, that can really clue you into what is going on. It's kind of like including imaging on on test questions. You don't need to understand what's going on in the imaging, but if you do understand what's going on, it really helps you answer the question. And that's really what Chapman's points are. So if you don't know your Chapman's points, you're missing out not only on questions asking you about Chapman's points, but you're missing out on all of the questions that include the Chapman's point in the physical exam portion. So it can be a big help for a lot of questions to know your Chapman's points. So in addition to listening to this episode, in which I'll include how I remember the Chapman's points, I highly recommend either creating an Anki deck for Chapman's points or using a pre-made one. The one that I have used for years is the OMM for Zonkey deck. So it is made to actually fit into your step one Zonkey deck, but I used the same deck for complex level one, level two, and for my studying for level three. So a major mistake I see mostly in medical school education is to group the Chapman's points by organ system. It's much more helpful to just group them anatomically because you'll see that so many of the Chapman's points are kind of where you would expect them to be based off of anatomy. And when it's not, there's a few like exceptions to that, but a lot of times it's also pretty much in line with the sympathetic innervations. And then there's also the fact that a lot of times the anterior Chapman's points are taught separately from the posterior Chapman's points, which doesn't really make much sense. So I want to first start out by explaining what Chapman's points are, because there's so many osteopathic medical students and recent graduates that really don't understand this concept. And then they're just memorizing things that they don't actually understand. And also, if you're not looking at this from a clinical, practical standpoint, and you really just want to know your Chapman's points to do all your on your exams, well, you still need to understand what a Chapman's point really is, because some test questions will ask you this. And it's one that should be a very easy answer. So Chapman's point can also be referred to a Chapman's reflex. They are nerve gangliform contractions that are below the skin in the subcutaneous tissue. So, and they are viscerosomatic reflexes because they are triggered from visceral dysfunctions that then show up in the somatic system. So something that you're able to palpate. When you feel that point, often referred to as like a tapioca pearl or a small grain of rice, they're often described as smooth nodules as well. When you feel those, you are palpating something that is a visceral dysfunction, but it's a reflex from a visceral dysfunction. And many times when you palpate, it will cause some pain. It's not quite the amount of pain as you would expect with a tender point. With tender points, you feel something a little bit different. You kind of feel more of like the taut muscle. These are a little bit more discreet. They're about 2 to 3 millimeters in diameter. What's important to know is that these are also different from trigger points. So when you touch a Chapman's point, you're going to have some pain right there, but it's not going to radiate anywhere else. And you should know that they can be used as diagnostic to make a diagnosis of a dysfunction, and they can also be used therapeutically by holding pressure over the point and kind of massaging the point out. That is known to cause some therapeutic relief. They can also be described as contracted lymphoid tissue as well. They are thought to arise, like I said, viscerosomatic reflex, but also due to lymphatic congestion and inhibition of nerve sheaths at free nerve endings. And what's useful to know as we go through the location of these Chapman's reflexes is that they are deep rooted in the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. So you're going to see, especially with the posterior points, that they pretty much line up with the sympathetic fibers that you would expect. And many of them correspond to anatomical locations. Typically, when you have anterior Chapman's points, those are going to be more in areas of fascia. It's not necessarily along muscles or bones. Many of them are going to be in intercostal spaces, which whenever you see any finding in an intercostal space, you should probably be thinking about Chapman's points. And then the posterior points, those are more often found on bones. So many of them, especially along the spine, they're going to be found between the spinous process and the transverse process. I'm often asked about what question banks to use to study for medical school board exams, and I always recommend TrueLearn. TrueLearn helped me score competitively on Comlex Level 1 and Level 2, shelf exams, and the USMLE Step 1 and Step 2. And I'm currently using their question bank to study for Level 3. I love TrueLearn's practice questions because they include detailed answer explanations and comprehensive analysis of how you're doing compared to your past progress and compared to your peers. I am so happy that FirstLine has partnered with TrueLearn. For a discount on your subscription, use the link in the episode description and use code FirstLine at checkout. FirstLine. One word, no spaces, no capitalization. And as I go through these, I think it's more helpful to find the Chapman's point on yourself as you're learning these, instead of just looking at a picture of where they're located. So if you're able to, as long as you're not like driving right now, it's helpful to, as you're listening through this episode, to try to palpate it on yourself. And I think it's so interesting. Personally, for me, I always know where the lung Chapman's points are, because especially like during the winter when I have worse asthma, I will very consistently have a left-sided Chapman's point for the upper lung in the third intercostal space. I can palpate that on myself and I know exactly where it is. So if you're able to find any Chapman's point on you, first of all, you're more convinced of, you know, that Chapman's points are something that is practical to learn, because unfortunately some like osteopathic medical students and grads, they like say that they don't believe in Chapman's point, which I think is absurd. But I think like the problem is that those people have never really palpated a Chapman's point on themselves or their like OMM partner, because unfortunately with OMM, when we're learning OMM, we're practicing on each other. And we're, for the most part, pretty healthy 20-something-year-olds. So, of course, you're not going to find much on each other. So, you could have, like, a full OMM curriculum of Chapman's point, and you'll never palpate a Chapman's point. I know when I was learning them, if someone found a Chapman's point, the rest of the classroom would run over to the person and try to palpate it for themselves. But I don't know if that's something that happens at all schools. So it's really helpful if you're able to palpate one on yourself, because you will never forget that one. And what's good about Chapman's point is that once you know a few of them, like from memory, you're able to figure out the rest of them pretty easily because they're in a sort of order. And you'll see a little bit more what I mean by that. So what you'll find with the anterior Chapman's points are they basically start around the first rib. And they're mostly in intercostal spaces. And then there's like a few that you just have to memorize that are weird. So when you're talking about the first rib, which Chapman's points are we talking about? So first rib, these are going to be the ones that are part of like your ENT system. So lateral to the first rib and superior to the clavicle, that is where the middle ear is. So the middle ear, anatomically pretty high up on your body, that's going to be lateral to the first rib. Also, kind of in the same area, you're going to have your sinuses, which makes sense because sinuses, middle ear, kind of all connected, right? So near first rib and the second rib, near the clavicle, that kind of area is going to be where the sinuses are. And what's interesting about Chapman's point is that some of them can be found in multiple places, but don't get hung up on this because, you know, if your sinuses are found near the first and second rib, if you get a question on this on your exam, you're not going to see two answers as A, first rib, B, second rib, C, third rib. They're not going to make you choose between them. So just know first and second rib sinuses. That first intercostal space, that's going to be your tonsils. Then around this as well, you have like the sternoclavicular joint. So that's, you know, very close to the first and second rib where your clavicle is articulating with the sternum. That's going to be where your pharynx is. So what I think about this is that, you know, your sinuses are going to be bilateral, first and second rib near the clavicle. Middle ear, you know, it's bilateral. Pharynx is a midline structure. That's why it's going to be right on the sternoclavicular joint, because that's more midline. So that's how I think of that. The larynx, very much anatomically close to the pharynx. So this is the sternocostal junction of the second rib. So it's right near the pharynx, about 2 to 3 inches lateral to that sternocostal junction with the second rib. So now we're down to second rib. Second rib is going to be your tongue. So how I think about this is, you know, first rib was your sinuses, second rib a little bit anatomically inferior, that's going to be where your tongue is, okay? So what else is near that second rib or second intercostal space? So these are ones that people get hung up on because, okay, if you have a Chapman's point in the second intercostal space, which of these are there? Well, they're not going to put all of these as answer choices because they're all found in the second intercostal space. So what are you going to find? Well, right near the sternocostal junction in the second intercostal space is where your thyroid is. That is just one, like anatomically, when you're going down from your ENT, that your thyroid is right there in your neck. So that's how I think about the thyroid being second intercostal space. What else is there? Well, you have that second intercostal space is also your esophagus, again, in your neck. But the weird ones that you're going to find in your second intercostal space also is the heart and the bronchus. So how are we going to remember that? Well, I think of heartburn. So when you have heartburn, that could be like esophageal reflux, and it has heart in it. So that's how I know that the heart and the esophagus are both the same. And really just, it's the tonsils in the first intercostal space, but really a lot of the Chapman's points, they start in two, the second intercostal space. So this is really where we start counting down. The bronchus is also there. I just think of the lungs as 2, 3, and 4. You have two lungs, so that's where the lungs start. And then you just go, bronchus is like what I think of as the really upper lung. And then the upper lung would be third and the lower lung is fourth. So 2, 3, and 4 are your lungs. Before I go on with what comes after the fourth intercostal space, I am just going to point out the weird one. So the eyes. The eyes are the weird one that you just have to memorize. It's on the surgical neck of the humerus. So what I think of that is like, I literally like, when I learned this, I just pictured having like actual eyes on your humerus. And I have not been able to like forget about that. So whatever you need to do, surgical neck of the humerus, that's where the anterior Chapman's point for the eyes are. It's just a weird one. So now we did second, third, and fourth intercostal space for the lungs. Now we are arriving at the fifth intercostal space. So this is really where the GI gets started. And I just think of this like anatomically, this is around where your stomach is going to be. It also really lines up with the sympathetic innervations for the GI system. So it's not very hard to forget. So stomach is going to be 2, so it's going to be the 5th and the 6th on the left side. So your stomach is mostly on the left side of your body. This should be pretty easy to remember. So then you have the acidity in the 5th and then the peristalsis in the 6th intercostal space. So how are you going to remember this? I think of like when food drops into your stomach, I think about the acid kind of acidifying the food and then peristalsis happening after that, pushing it into the small intestines. So I know that all of these are happening at the same time, but this is just the visual that I think about so that I know. Fifth is acidity, sixth is peristalsis. It's also in alphabetical order. So A for acidity, so that's going to be first. Okay, so let's finish out the left side. So then on the left side, the seventh intercostal space, that's going to be your spleen. And this is just because I know that stomach's on the left side and then the spleen is also in your left upper quadrant. So that comes next. Going to the right side, well, what's in your right upper quadrant? That is your liver and gallbladder. So your liver is going to be, your liver and gallbladder are 5, 6, and 7 on the right side. Your pancreas is going to be on the right 7th and 8th intercostal space. It's really more of like a left side structure, but I just think about where the head of the pancreas is, and that's more on the right side. So that's how I remember it. And then you have, so then we're on the 8th intercostal space. This is when it gets to be more bilateral. So you have the small intestine, 8, 9, and 10. So you can separate this with duodenum being 8th, jejunum being 9th, and ileum being 10th. But typically, it's just going to be small intestine is 8 through 10. And then that's it with the intercostal spaces. So I know I have a ton more of the anterior Chapman's points and the posterior Chapman's points to go over and a few more tips to address, but I like to keep these episodes short, so this is going to be another episode that requires a part 2. So stay tuned and subscribe so that you get a notification when that episode comes out. View the show notes for additional information about this episode and access the link to First Line's website. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to First Line on your favorite podcast app to hear a new episode every Monday. Thanks for listening.